Adhamarhava Kuncha Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kuncha Bihari. Gopi Chanda Bhava Ta Gurvare Dhari. Yashodanandana Vraja Janaranjana Yashodanandana Vraja Janaranjana Janunatira Vandachari Yamunatira Vanakariya Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Vishnupada Paramahamsa Bhagavad Gita Siddhar Siddha Shri Shiva Swami Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Shiva Prabhupada Ki Jai Shiva Bhagavatam Ki Jai Samadvedakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Garanga. Nama Om Vishnu Paraya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamani. Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravana Bacharani Dear Vishesha Shunyavari Pashtachani Sitarani. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 9, Love Yashoda Bhayan's Lord Krishna, Text 12. Tyaktva yashtem sutam bhitam Gigyayar bhakavatsala Yesha kila tam barham Dhanata virya kovida Chakva yashtim sutam bhitam Vidyayar bhakavatsala Yesha kilatam badhum Dhanata viryat kovida Chakva yashtim sutam bhitam Vidyayar bhakavatsala Yesha kilatam badhum Dhanatad viryakovida. Yes, seems to be done. Ladies? Stick in her hand. Sutam, her son. Bitam, considering her son's great fear. Vigyaya, understanding. Arbhakavatsala, the most affectionate mother of Krishna. Yesha, desired. Kila, indeed. Tam, Krishna, Vadhum, to bind, Damna, with a rope, Atat Viryakovida, without knowledge of the supremely powerful personality of Godhead. Because of intense love for Krishna. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Mother Yashoda was always overwhelmed by intense love for Krishna, not knowing who Krishna was or how powerful he was. Because of maternal affection for Krishna, she never even cared to know who he was. Therefore, when she saw that her son had become excessively afraid, she threw the stick away and desired to bind him so that he would not commit any further naughty activities. Report. Mother Yashoda wanted to bind Krishna not in order to chastise him, but because she thought the child was so restless that he might leave the house in fear. That would be another disturbance. Therefore, because of full affection, to stop Krishna from leaving the house, she wanted to bind him with a rope. Mother Yashoda wanted to impress upon Krishna that since he was afraid merely to see her stick, he should not perform such disturbing activities as breaking a container of yogurt and butter and distributing its contents to the monkeys. Mother Yashoda did not care to understand who Krishna was and how his power spreads everywhere. This is an example of pure love for Krishna. Om Gyanatamandasya Gyanajana Salakaya Chakshulun Nitamhina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Vanchakalpatrubhischa kripasindhubhyevacha patitano pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. So in this chapter and the last chapter, actually, we have had many, many verses about the wonderful pastimes of Mother Yashoda and Krishna. And we've seen many, many different angles of this, and this has been discussed quite a bit about Mother Yashoda and the purity of her love for Krishna and how she's often covered by Yoga Maya to increase that loving sentiment in the Vatsalya Rasa. So then in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that this is an example of pure love of Krishna. So Mother Yashoda is one of the exemplars of pure love. And through these pastimes, we get an understanding, or at least we get some indication of what the nature of the pure love for Krishna that is exhibited by the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that today, about what is pure devotion and what is a pure devotee. What does this mean when we say Mother Yashoda is an example of pure love for Krishna? Of course, there are many definitions, and Srila Prabhupada uses the term pure devotee or pure devotion in different ways, in different places and circumstances, in his purports, letters, and talks, etc. In one definition, Srila Prabhupada said that all of his devotees are pure devotees. I remember the occurrence of that. One particular devotee was having a little difficulty, as I recall. At least we thought he was having some difficulty. I don't know if he did. But he went to see Srila Prabhupada, and you know, there was some criticism of him, and Srila Prabhupada said that this devotee was a pure devotee. And of course he promptly reported it back to all of us. But then we learned that the second thing that Srila Prabhupada said was, yes, he is a pure devotee, all of my disciples are pure devotees. So that put in a little bit of context. So what did Srila Prabhupada mean by this? He obviously wasn't thinking of me at that moment. He must have forgotten me as one of his disciples when he was saying they were all pure devotees. But what this really meant was that all of Srila Prabhupada's disciples were performing or practicing the process of pure devotional service. In other words, what we do in bhakti yoga, the way that we've been trained by Srila Prabhupada, is the path of pure devotional service. There's no jnana, there's no karma, there's no other contaminations, there's no other outside material philosophy, simply the philosophy of pure devotional service. And even though we are in the neophyte stage, we'd say we are neophyte pure devotees perhaps, or beginners in the process of pure devotional service, we understand that this, by the continuation of this process, this will lead to the actual stage of pure devotion. So I thought another good description of pure devotional service is given in the pastimes in the first canto, chapter 5 of Narada Muni. And when Narada Muni sees and has a chance to serve the Bhaktivedantas, the pure devotees, remembering this purport to the Prabhupada of 1.5.25, explains the qualities of pure devotion. Prabhupada says the qualities of a pure devotee means attraction for the personality of Godhead's name, fame, qualities, pastimes, etc. Infection of the qualities of a pure devotee means to imbibe the taste of pure devotion always in the transcendental activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the first thing is that one is always attracted to Krishna. That's one of the symptoms of pure devotional service. This transcendental taste at once makes all material things distasteful. So we know, we've read in other places, that this is another symptom. That one is very attracted to Krishna, and one is not attracted, conversely, to the material world. Therefore, a pure devotee is not at all attracted by material activities. After the elimination of all sins or obstacles on the path of devotional service, one can become attracted, one can have steadiness, one can have perfect taste, one can have transcendental emotions, and at last, one can be situated on the plane of loving service of the Lord. Krishna Prabhupada has just now succinctly discussed all the stages of devotional service in this very simple sentence of how we go from different practices of sadhana bhakti to where taste develops and then further progressions of pure service. All of these stages develop by the association of pure devotees. And of course, this was the context of the story of Narada Muni. He attained perfection through this association of the great devotees and by rendering service to them. Of course, the Nectar Devotion of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu also describes the characteristics or results of pure devotional service and mentions six of them. The first one is immediate relief of distress or the ability to destroy suffering or klesha. Pure devotional service immediately destroys all sufferings from the material world. Secondly, it awards auspiciousness, that everything in one's life becomes glorious, becomes happy. I don't know how to define auspiciousness other than using the same word. In other words, everything is positive. Everything is, instead of everything being inauspicious or unhappy in this material world, the opposite is there. Next one is disregard for liberation. In other words, one is situated in such a position of happiness that one doesn't really care whether one is liberated, not liberated, gets out of the material world, doesn't get out of the material world. Another quality or characteristic is its rarity of attainment. You're not going to walk down the streets of Alachua, Gainesville, and just see, at least not yet, see hundreds of pure devotees walking by you. Now, in time, maybe we will. But right now, that's probably not the case. It's still fairly rare. And it gives transcendental pleasure. One gains all happiness through the process of pure devotional service, and it has the ability to attract Krishna. Only pure devotional service attracts Krishna, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Now, it's interesting that in the Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura's purports to the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he mentions that there are these six stages, or six results or characteristics of pure devotional service. And he says the first two are attained just at the stage of sadhana bhakti. The second two, or the first four, we could say, at the stage of bhava. and all six when one is at the stage of prema, which I think is quite interesting, which means that even at the stage of sadhana bhakti, which is where most of us are at, that those qualities, one's suffering is destroyed and all good fortune is there, is already there. We've already attained that, the elimination of suffering and the bringing about of all auspiciousness and good fortune, simply by becoming a devotee and in beginning the engagement in the practice of devotional service. So we can see the power of bhakti, even at the sadhana stage. Okay. Now, one of the qualities was that it's rarely achieved. Why is it rarely achieved? Well, it's rarely achieved because Krishna is not so quick or so easy to give pure devotional service. Why? Because pure devotional service means something very special. It means, especially in relationship to Krishna, it means that Krishna is purchased by the love of the devotee. This is described in the, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport in Nectar Devotion, that why is it not easily awarded? Because Krishna is purchased by the love of the devotee. He becomes indebted to that devotee. He becomes, a very, very special relationship develops. And we can understand this even from examples in the material world. If someone has, have you ever noticed that if somebody, whether you particularly like a person or don't like a person, if that person sort of likes you, then don't you automatically like them? You know, and obviously if a person has great love for you, then you feel reciprocal relationship. And not only, and if that love is very strong, you not only feel reciprocation of love, but you feel a little bit indebted, don't you? In other words, you wouldn't want to hurt that person. You would want all good fortune for that person. You would want good things for them. This is what love is. Real love is not centered on the self. Real love is centered on the other. And of course, in Krishna consciousness, pure spiritual love means that the devotee has no other interest, no other desire than their loving relationship with Krishna and to see Krishna, to serve Krishna, see that Krishna is happy. And what is the relationship from Krishna's side? The same. Even more so, of course, because he is the Supreme. Krishna wants so much to see his devotees happy and wants to take care of his devotees. So Krishna becomes very, very indebted to the pure service of his devotees. And so he's often said that he wants to make their words become true. In so many ways, he becomes very indebted. Anything that his pure devotee says, he'll try to make it happen because of that affection and that relationship. Now, he can't go on doing this with everyone very easily. If he made everyone's words come true, then there could be some real disasters in this world. So he only does this for his pure devotees. Those he knows have pure love and have the interest of all living entities deeply within their heart. So he can do that. So in that way, it is very rarely achieved. But, you know, when Prabhupada discusses, he says, yes, it is very rarely achieved, but yet it is also very easily attained if one simply, within one's heart, wholeheartedly surrenders to Krishna. So how do we do this? How do we attain the stage of pure love for Krishna where we enter into this mutually reciprocal relationship of love? Well, it's simply attained through bhakti. Bhakti is so powerful that bhakti is both the means and the end. If we want to attain bhakti, we simply practice bhakti. It's actually quite simple. The process of sadhana bhakti leads to the purification of the heart, which leads us to the point eventually of pure love. As we become purified more and more of all of our material anartas, all of our material desires, our material thoughts, then our natural devotion automatically awakens within us, and that develops. So, in the Bhagavad Gita 11:54, Krishna says, "My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing before you, and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding." So in this verse, and of course in 1855, Krishna says several places, even within the Bhagavad Gita, that it is the process of pure devotional service of bhakti that is the means to attain Him. It is the way to understand Krishna, to enter into relationship with Krishna, and develop one's love. And that purport, Srila Prabhupada says, one who has unflinching devotion for the Supreme Lord and is directed by the spiritual master, in whom he has similar unflinching faith, can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead by revelation. One cannot understand Krishna by mental speculation. For one who does not take personal training under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, it is impossible to even begin to understand Krishna. So, pure devotional service is necessary. Approaching Krishna in the spirit of bhakti is necessary. But how does one do it? One does it under the direction of the spiritual master. Otherwise, we do not know who is God. We can't see God. We could speculate in so many ways, and we see that philosophers and religionists and so many people have speculated for thousands of years about what is the nature of the absolute. What is the truth? What is real? You know, is there a God? And there's so much writing, so much speculation, but it never really leads anywhere. It doesn't lead to the absolute truth. But one who takes guidance and direction from one who has seen the truth can easily be on that path to seeing God themselves. And they're rightly situated in this process of bhakti. So, to become purified and attain this transcendental vision of revelation of Krishna, as Srila Prabhupada says in this purport, involves this cleansing process of devotional service. In a purport to teachings of Lord Kapila, Srila Prabhupada says, if we are devotees, lovers of God, the ointment of love will clear our eyes. In order to see God, we have to cleanse our eyes by wiping away the cataracts of material contamination. Although we may be eager to see God, we cannot see Him with these material eyes. And of course, how do we see Krishna? Krishna Prabhupada says we act in such a way that Krishna will see us. So we have to wipe away this contamination of material affection, of material attraction, you know, by the process of bhakti. So Krishna is actually very easy to see. Actually, we can see Krishna right here in front of us on the altar. But most of us don't have the transcendental vision that this actually is Krishna. That this is Krishna in front of us. That Krishna is the super soul within everyone's heart. Krishna is everywhere. There's no question of where is Krishna, Krishna's hiding, or Krishna's not there. But we don't have the transcendental vision. Because of this contamination of material consciousness that Srila Prabhupada speaks about, we're not able to see Krishna. But it's not that Krishna is not there or Krishna is not available. It's a matter of changing our vision, changing our consciousness, and changing the process of seeing everything materially to seeing everything spiritually. And when we see, have spiritual vision, transcendental vision, we see Krishna everywhere. This is the nature of the spiritualist, the transcendentalist. Krishna is not hidden. Krishna is available and there to see. Prabhupada said in purport to Bhagavad Gita 10.1, we have to cultivate such practice in Krishna consciousness that we may become dear to God. My spiritual master used to say, do not try to see Krishna, just act in such a way that God will see you. If I want to see God and I make God my order supplier, please come and I will see you. So God is not so small that at once I call him and he'll come. No. We have to qualify ourselves. Therefore, by your qualification, God will himself come and see you. So as we were saying, the qualification is the process of service to Krishna and to Guru. In the Sutashvatara Upanishad 6.23, it stated, Yasya Devi Para Bhaktir Yata Devi Yata Gurau Tashyaita Katita Hyarta Pratisanti Mahatmanaha. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. So it's a question of faith and service to the spiritual master and to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if that faith becomes sufficiently strong, then one is able to understand Krishna and to ultimately see Krishna face to face. But unless that faith is there, and that faith develops through the process of bhakti, through the process of service to the spiritual master, the association of devotees, and the process of hearing and chanting, our faith becomes increasingly strong. And it's from a platform of strong faith that we start to make tangible advancement in Krishna consciousness. Actually, advancement in Krishna consciousness and increase of our faith are practically synonymous, and one goes along with the other. As our faith develops, we are able to more and more engage in the process of devotional service, and as we engage more strongly in the process of devotional service, our faith develops. So they mutually reinforce one another, and we develop deeper and deeper love for God. So there's a very, very nice verse and purport from the Brahma Samhita. And actually this purport is by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. Verses, text 38, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is Shama Sundar. Krishna himself, with inconceivable, innumerable attributes, whom the pure devotees see in their heart of hearts, with the eye of devotion, tinged with a salve of love. So now we'll hear from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati how one is able to attain this transcendental vision of love of God. The Shama Sundar form of Krishna is his inconceivable, simultaneous, personal and impersonal, self-contradictory form. You got to really stay with Bhaktisiddhanta here. True devotees see that form in their purified hearts under the influence of devotional trance. Didn't know that you're all walking around in devotional trance, right? Okay. It should be. It will be clear that the form of Sri Krishna is the full personality of Godhead and can only be visible in the heart of a true devotee, which is the only true seat in the state of trance under the influence of devotion. When Krishna manifested himself in Vraja, both the devotees and the non-devotees saw him with his very eye, but only the devotees cherished him, eternally present in Vraja, as the priceless jewel of their heart. Nowadays also the devotees see him in Vraja in their hearts, saturated with devotion, although they do not see him with their eyes. So that's a kind of an interesting concept that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj is talking about, this transcendental vision not being external vision, but being an internal vision, being something of the heart, that we understand transcendental knowledge and begin to understand Krishna and actually even see Krishna within the heart. He goes on to say, the eye of devotion is nothing but the eye of the pure, unalloyed, spiritual self of the jiva. The form of Krishna is visible to that eye in proportion to its purification by the practice of devotion. When the devotion of the neophyte reaches the stage of bhava bhakti, the pure eye of that devotee is tinged with a salve of love by the grace of Krishna, which enables him to see Krishna face to face. The phrase, in their hearts, means Krishna is visible in proportion as their hearts are purified by the practice of devotion. So he is saying that this is our natural state. This eye of devotion, he says, is nothing but the pure, unalloyed spiritual self of the jiva. In other words, this is the constitutional position. In our natural state, we are seeing Krishna. We are with Krishna. We are serving Krishna. We are loving Krishna. This is the natural state of the living entity. And that is the natural state of our vision. Now our vision is covered. It's contaminated by so many material desires and so many material circumstances and our activities from many, many lifetimes. But when we begin the process of devotional service, Krishna consciousness is cleansing, purifying this contaminated state and cleansing our eyes so that our vision becomes increasingly clear. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is stating that there's a direct correlation. It's almost like a mathematical thing. To the degree that we are engaged in devotional service and becoming purified, to that degree we will see Krishna. Since when the devotion of the neophyte reaches the stage of Bhava Bhakti, the pure eyed devotee is tinged with a salve of love by the grace of Krishna. The phrase inner hearts means Krishna is visible in proportion as their hearts are purified by the practice of devotion. So, you come back to the question of what is a pure devotee? Obviously, a pure devotee is one who is seeing Krishna within one's heart, who is guided by Krishna at all times, and has no separate interest other than the devotional service of Krishna. Of course, the degree that we may be seeing Krishna directly, even in the heart, this is something that is hard to judge. This is a proportionate thing, as being mentioned here. And devotional service is a process. It's a process that doesn't happen immediately. So one might even be at a very, very high stage of devotion and yet still not be seeing Krishna face to face. But that comes about gradually. There's a gradual process of the reawakening of the heart and the eye of the devotee to reach this natural stage of pure devotion to Krishna. And as we see in the residence of Vrindavan at Mother Yashoda, this stage is fully manifest, is fully reached. To them, there's no question of practice. There's no sadhana. They've reached perfection. And that perfection that they exhibit is that they are serving Krishna 24 hours a day. So it is not that we practice sadhana, we try to work so hard, we try to serve 24 hours a day so we can reach some stage where we don't have to serve. No. We reach the stage where we'll still be serving 24 hours a day. The difference is it'll be with pure love and pure reciprocation and in pure relationship with Krishna. So devotional service simply gets better. It gets better and better as one moves gradually, bit by bit, from the stage of Vaidhi Bhakti to the stage of more spontaneous attraction to Krishna. And as we're beginning, the first purport we read by Srila Prabhupada, that as this taste develops, and as we begin that process of beginning to see Krishna, understand Krishna, feel the presence of Krishna somewhat, then one reaches higher and higher stages of pure love to the stages of bhava and then eventually prema. And then one is fully situated in pure devotional service. So we need to be very heartened. We should be very enthusiastic. We should be very much recognizing our good fortune of being involved by the grace of Srila Prabhupada in this process of pure devotional service. And with full knowledge and full faith that even if we're struggling and we feel sometimes very neophyte and very beginning, and sometimes devotional service can seem difficult, or we may feel that we have so many material desires, and when will this ever end, and when will I become pure? It will simply happen as we continue the practice of devotional service. So devotional service must be practiced with determination, with enthusiasm, and with patience. And that patience means having faith that if we simply continue to engage in Krishna consciousness, that we will eventually become purified and be relating with Krishna as the residents from Vrindavan are in these wonderful pastimes that we're enjoying in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. So I'll end at that point. Are there any comments or questions? Trivikaran Prabhu?
Interesting. I find that practice in devotional service is very simple. Following the rules and chanting, that is not so difficult to, but yet again it seems like lots of us get a really hard time somehow, and sometimes for me it's really bewildering, you know. Like recently, I was encouraging my son to get up early, come to the temple, and every day he's promising me, but I never see him here.
Mm-hmm.
Then one day he hurt his leg, and then he's telling me, well, his leg is hurt, so he can't come. But the thing is, it seems bewildering how such a simple thing becomes so difficult for people. Can you explain a little bit on that?
Well, Prabhupada said, you know, simple for the simple and difficult for the crooked. So, what does that crooked mean? It means that we have so many material desires, you know, and those material desires that we have complicate the process very much. Our minds make it difficult. And the problem is that we tend to listen to the mind a lot. And I was just talking with my wife, because we do a lot of counseling with devotees, and we were just saying that, you know, sometimes it comes down to a real simple process, a real simple psychological process that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj gave. He said, what did he say to, I forget if it was morning or evening, but beat the mind with shoes in the morning and sticks in the evening, or vice versa, whichever it was. In other words, you know, we can make it really difficult. You know, and our minds tend to do this. This is the nature of the mind. The nature of the mind is accepting and rejecting. And that also means accepting and rejecting Krishna consciousness and accepting and rejecting material life and material sense gratification. So when the mind's in control, Krishna consciousness can seem very difficult. But as you said, in reality, it's quite simple. If we actually look at the process of devotional service, what does it mean? Hearing, chanting, you know, reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, serving the deities. It's actually fairly simple. It doesn't even require like complex understanding of philosophy. That can be there if one is inclined. There's so much, you know, philosophy to understand, but it's not even necessary. You know, it's really the simple heart of the devotee as one, you know, surrenders to Krishna. That's the process. But yeah, it does become difficult because of our mind. And I was thinking of another thing that you once, what was it that, I'm trying to think what the question was that was asked to Srila Prabhupada. I think it was, if our purpose is to be Krishna conscious, why is Maya so strong? And Srila Prabhupada said, because our purpose is not strong. In other words, if our purpose is not strong, if we're not very, very dedicated and our faith is not strong in Krishna consciousness, then Maya becomes strong, you know. But of course, it's an individual process, and we all have to engage ourselves. We have to find those problems, those obstacles, those stumbling blocks that are keeping us from Krishna consciousness, and how to really systematically, you know, rid ourselves of those issues. And of course, that's where not only the process of devotional service of bhakti, but the process of the association of devotees can be very powerful. Sometimes just expressing our doubts, talking to other devotees, having that association of Sadhu Sangha can be a very powerful way of keeping Krishna conscious. I was thinking of something today, and I was thinking of a particular devotee and seemed to be having some difficulties, not difficulties like, I mean, sort of mental intellectual difficulties, and seemed like being somewhat removed. And I was thinking this person was very isolated, you know, not in association of devotees. And when we're not in association of devotees, it's easy for our mind to go off in so many different ways. And it can be very subtle. It can just be very little subtle differences. But because we're not sort of hearing constantly the philosophy, sort of on being on the same page with the association of devotees, it's real easy to just get off in little ways. So one of the things that we need to do to control the mind is simply, you know, hearing and chanting the association of devotees, and revealing your mind in confidence, hearing the confidence of others. You know, I think these are very powerful processes. Okay. Krishna Keshava, then we'll get back. Dharmaraj. I thought Keshava was here. You transformed. You know.
So, sometimes we question that in that we're practicing devotional service, we're trying to come to a better platform, and it appears as though that we are being, you know, beaten up and defeated by so many angles, by Maya and or what we may think is Maya. So my question, Prabhu, is, you know, as a repeated question sometimes come to me is that, why Krishna? Yet again we're blaming Krishna or turning to him for him to serve us. Why doesn't Krishna make it easier for us so that by our practice we can very easily, you know, or what I would say, yeah, very easily develop rather than getting so much difficulties. If we look within our community, we find like sometimes devotees' life are so much of a struggle as against materialists, for example.
That's a question I often ask. Yeah, so why doesn't Krishna make it easier for us? Well, and again, a lot of it is our mind, because in one sense it's not so difficult. But Krishna also does sometimes test our sincerity, I think. You know, like we're saying, the rarity of devotional service, that Krishna doesn't just give it completely free. It's almost like we have to pass the test. You know, it's not the grueling tests of sacrifice, but just as we have to, you know, if you want to be a medical doctor, you've got to pass the exam, or a lawyer, you have to pass the bar exam, like that. So, you know, to be a pure devotee, to have Krishna's association, be able to go back to the spiritual world, to associate eternally with the pure devotees, you kind of have to pass the test, pass the exam. And so Krishna does give us those tests, you know, but they're not just random, and they certainly are not heartless. Krishna, this one thing the Prabhupada said was that Krishna does not give us tests which are beyond our capability. In other words, he may give us some difficulty, but he also will give us the means to overcome that. So for sincere devotee, even if there are difficulties and tests, we learn to see those as opportunities. We see these, that this is an opportunity to surrender, this is an opportunity to learn. Somehow or another, Krishna has put me in this situation. For what reason? What do I need to do? What do I need to improve in myself? How do I need to improve my devotional attitude? Whatever it may be. Yeah. So yeah, there are difficulties that are there, but for the devotee, they're not just random and blind. They're purposeful. That Krishna arranges in a way for us to, you know, be able to actually surrender to him and come back to him. Yeah. Prabhu, did you have a question?
Yes. Srila Prabhupada did give us the perfect formula for being successful in Krishna consciousness. It's all in the books. It's all in the practice that we do from the time we get up, the time we... But it does seem that one of the biggest challenges is the mind. And I've heard this repeatedly and I've read it, and beating the mind with a shoe. And I know the Hare Krishna mantra is one way of controlling that. It's a big way. It's probably the way.
Yeah.
It's the most essential way. It's just to constantly chant, because the mind is so crazy. And I know even with me as an example. So could you elaborate on some other methods just to keep the mind from just going 100 miles an hour, and 1 minute we're here, and then the next minute it goes? Yeah. Could you just elaborate on that a little bit more, please?
Well, I'll try. Chris, you gave the best answer yourself, is through chanting. Mantra means to control the mind. And that's the purpose of the Hare Krishna mantra. I mean, many purposes of the Hare Krishna mantra. Chanting is the prime method for controlling the mind, and for not only controlling the mind, but for purifying the mind. Because it's very difficult, you know, of course Arjuna asked Krishna the same question in the Bhagavad Gita. He said to control the mind is like controlling the raging wind, you know. And what did Krishna say to Arjuna? He said, yes, it is very difficult. I think it's interesting, in the Bhagavad Gita, first Krishna, he didn't say, no, you know, what's your problem? He said, yes. He said, it is difficult. So first Krishna kind of gives a little bit of empathy. He says, yes, I understand that it's very difficult to control your wind, to control your mind, which is like trying to control the wind. He said, but how can we do it? He says, by practice and detachment, right? That's what Krishna says. It can be done through practice and detachment. So practice is to practice the devotional service, the hearing and chanting. I mean, the more that we hear the philosophy, the more that we are chanting Hare Krishna, the more the mind comes under control. So, as well as chanting, I think hearing is very important. I find sometimes devotees who seem like they're, you know, their faith is a little bit shaky or they're having some difficulties, often it seems like, you know, they don't really hear the philosophy. you know, they're not able to come to class, or they're not having other arrangements, or they're not reading on their own or reading with other devotees. So I think that's very, very important, that, you know, being saturated in the philosophy, after a while it sinks in, you know, the mind starts to get it finally. Oh, okay, I've heard that about 300 times now, but I'm not this body. Maybe there's something to that, you know. But it takes, we don't get it with one hearing. You know, it always amazes me, you know, the characters in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, from thousands of years ago, another millennia, another yugas, like that, it seems as though they might even be in some material consciousness, some great sage comes along, he tells them the philosophy, you know, says all, and they go, oh, okay, I get it. And then they become a pure devotee. End of story. You know, for us Kali Yuga residents, it doesn't seem to quite happen that way. It takes a lot of hearing, and a lot of chanting, and a lot of purifying until we really start to get it. Because we have, in fact, Prabhupada once said, to try to purify these Western disciples is like trying to wash coal. You know, I mean, trying to wash coal, can you imagine? It's, you know, the black kind of keeps coming off and off and off. So we're a little bit like that. We have a lot of contamination, a long way to go in trying to become purified. So the hearing and chanting is very important. Association of devotees is very important. And, you know, so it's the practices there and the detachment, which is kind of interesting because we don't usually think of detachment as one of our primary processes. In fact, it's described that through the process of bhakti that automatically knowledge and detachment arise as concomitant products, right? So in other words, detachment will come about through the process of bhakti, but Krishna's also indicating it's not a bad idea to try to cultivate it somewhat ourselves. In other words, we need to also take those opportunities to become detached from the mind. A lot of times it's a question of recognition of the mind and how the mind is acting. Even as devotees, we fall into this a lot. We know that we're not the mind, we know we're not the body, we know we're the spirit soul, we know that we're a servant of Krishna. And as soon as our mind starts up, it's kind of like, well, we forgot the entire philosophy and we start listening to the mind, right? You know, because it's fairly easy to, I think it is, it's fairly easy to see you're not your body, you know, like, you know, right now my, you know, because I have a certain condition, my feet hurt, you know, but so what? I mean, you know, I know that's just my feet. Who identifies with their feet as the self, you know? I mean, you know, we're here in Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, but it's still different than the mind, intelligence, and ego, isn't it? The subtle body we tend to easily identify with, right? In fact, even as devotees, if the average person in two world almost absolutely thinks they are their mind, right? Whatever they're thinking, if any, that's me. But then I've actually, you know, in talking to people, said this, okay, but you say, I think this. Well, who's the I that's thinking this? They go, oh, right. So in other words, even in our common language, we recognize there's a difference between the self, the soul, and the mind. And many people, you know, if they stop and think about it, they even have this, you know, these different processes, like what comes from Buddhism, they call mindfulness. And it's something they use in therapy sometimes, and self-help of mindfulness, where you just simply try to watch the workings of your mind. And even average people can do this. You know, you sort of witness your mind rambling on. And then the idea is that you develop a certain detachment from that. You know, you realize, okay, that's not me. That's, you know, this mind that's going on. Well, for devotees, it's very easy. It's very natural. I mean, we get it, you know, instinctively, practically, of how this is. But we forget it. We often forget it, and we find. And sometimes you catch yourself. You know, it's like the mind is going on, and we're completely listening to it. And not only listening to it, we're identifying with it. We're thinking this is ourself. This is what I really feel. No, it isn't what you really feel. It isn't what you really think. It's what your mind happens to be thinking and feeling at that particular moment, which will change 10 minutes from now, or it will change tomorrow. What doesn't change is the constancy of the soul. It's our spiritual nature, which is eternal. It doesn't change in 10 minutes. It doesn't change tomorrow. It is eternal. And the more that we identify with that spiritual, with the spiritual reality and spiritual existence, then, you know, that identification with the mind falls off more and more. Anyway, that's a very large, complex topic, and I think we're out of time. One more, Tulsinanda. Is there a microphone over to Tulsi?
That was a really nice class. It was exactly what I needed to hear. I've been meditating a lot on the Anya Abhilashitashanyam verse, and just like trying to understand like what the heck is pure devotional service. And mostly it's just humbling and makes me realize how it's about a million miles away. But you mentioned in your class how you brought up a question, okay, so how do we get there to pure devotional service? And you said that bhakti comes from bhakti, that we just have to perform bhakti. But I'm wondering, like, if we're performing devotional service with ulterior motives, and it's not pure, we have all these ulterior motives, like we might have tinges of gyan and karma and everything. Mm-hmm. So then, if we're performing devotional service with those contaminating things, then how does it turn pure from practicing impure bhakti? How does it turn into pure bhakti?
The performing impure bhakti simply impedes or slows down the process. It doesn't stop the process. Nothing will stop the process. Of course, we know that it's a whole other topic we could have gotten into, but the offenses are a huge impediment in our devotional service, and particularly the offenses against the chanting of the holy name. Because the chanting of the holy name will purify all offenses. This is stated in Nectar Devotion. But if you commit offenses against the holy name, then you get a problem. No. But it's described that if you continue to chant, you will actually purify all of those offenses as well. And it's mentioned in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vishwanath commentaries that the most serious of the ten offenses are to commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name and to commit offenses to the devotees. So, you know, if other than those, so those we have to be very, very careful about, and he describes that we actually incur suffering if we commit those. The other offenses, we don't really suffer for them, but they slow us down. They slow down the process, and they require extended hearing and chanting to overcome them. So the ten offenses are very, very important, and they do tend to inhibit our devotional service. You know, but it's described that if the continued process of chanting will eventually purify everything. So, yeah, it's one of those, I mean, it's kind of like you answer, you know, it's a loop, you know, where we're sort of answering it with the same thing. But it really is that way, that, you know, we become purified, our chanting becomes purified through more chanting. You know, but Prabhupada also emphasized the ten offenses, to think about them, to remember them, to memorize them, to try to avoid them, to avoid the offenses. Yeah. Okay, we should end. All goes to Srila Prabhupada.